Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Very happy to be back in Texas, in the homeland. Thanks so much to L. Lauren at Some B I Know for covering for me on Friday. Spent the weekend at the VDARE conference. It was very fun. Met a lot of great people, content creators and fans alike. Shout out to Miss Reba. Had some very kind words for us over here at InfoWars. It was a very fun weekend. I have some comments about that I'd like to get to. I'm thinking about it. I haven't decided yet, but I'm seriously considering kicking the hornet's nest again. It's finally died down. The hornets have finally returned to their nest. Here I am thinking about kicking it again. Yes, I'm talking about flat earth. I'm thinking about talking about flat earth. I don't know. We'll get into it. But last week was a crazy week for me. Crazy week. Had the flat earth debate on Tuesday. The fallout was unexpected, kind of annoying. Then I got a surprise invite to VDARE. Frantically wrote a speech in about 4 hours about probably the most sensitive topic that it's possible to discuss. And I think it went extremely well. I do. Perhaps the most fun part was meeting people like John Derbyshire, who I'd heard many times as a child because my dad would listen to him on the radio. I got to sit next to him on a panel yesterday. And again, I've got some observations I'd like to make about that, but we'll save my personal observations until later in the show. We got a lot of news to cover. And we'll do that in the Daily Dispatch on the other side. But first, I want to go to this video since Mari Emanuel, the bishop stabbed in Australia, has returned to his work and has given a very powerful speech, a very powerful sermon about the attack. And I'd like to go to that now. Clip number four. Here is the Australian, Assyrian Christian bishop on his return after being attacked by a radical Islamist. Here he is.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. This young man who did this act almost 2 weeks ago, I say to you, my dear, you are my son. And you will always be my son. I will always pray for you. I'll always wish you nothing but the best. I pray that my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ of Nazareth, to enlighten your heart, enlighten your soul, your entire being, to realize, my dear, there is only one God who art in heaven, the creator of all mankind and everything else that is visible and invisible. And I say with absolute love, confidence, and humility, that God is Jesus Christ of Nazareth. But you are my son, my dear, and the Lord knows it is coming from the bottom of my heart. I'll always pray for you and for whoever was behind this act. In the name of my Jesus, I forgive you, I love you, and I will always pray for you. For me, it's a priceless gift that I am not worthy of. I pray the Lord accepts it.
Just incredibly powerful stuff from Mari Emanuel. I'll tell you, nothing hits me in the feels quite like forgiveness. I don't know. If I watch movies, you can watch characters die or just break up or whatever, and you're just like sitting there watching. But man, even in fiction, when you have somebody forgive rather than seek vengeance. And how much more powerful is it when it's not fantasy, but the real world? Incredible strength. Stay with us, folks. When we get back, we got protests roiling campuses across the United States being used to usher in free speech restrictions and a lot more. All right, welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, Infowars.com, band.video. We have just a ton of stuff to cover today, and we'll be taking your calls as well to discuss all of it. We've got correspondence dinner. We've got massive protests. against Israel on college campuses. We've got an uprising in Ireland as the native people stand up against the deliberate replacement of the natives in their homeland. Just a lot to get into, and that's hardly even touching on the legal and political things happening with Donald Trump and his various defensive maneuvers against the attacks levied at him. So let's just get into it. Here it is, your Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Monday, the 29th of April, 2024. New bombshell evidence emerges. Was Trump set up in classified document saga? That's the headline from Zero Hedge. This week in Florida, Judge Eileen Cannon unsealed a trove of documents that Jack Smith fought to keep hidden. And you'll soon find out why. Among the documents unsealed were extensive exhibits, motions, and other filings shedding light on the intricate web of communications between the Biden White House and National Archives and the National Archive and Record Administration in the lead up to Trump's indictment. Investigative journalist Julie Kelly found something interesting in the documents that could change everything. The first thing is testimony from an FBI agent who testified that the General Services Association, GSA, had been in possession of Trump's boxes in Virginia before ordering Trump's team to come get them. Well, and this is from Julie Kelly. Well, I'm pretty sure we never heard the part about this part of the classified documents slash box story. More from unredacted motions in Florida. This from an unsealed transcript of witness interviews. FBI agent said GSA was holding large quantity of Trump's boxes in Virginia and then ordered the Trump team to come and get and move them. Apparently these boxes that ended up containing papers with classified markings, quote, I'll double check indictment, but I don't recall this event in the timeline. So it appears that the Biden administration may have been responsible for shipping classified documents to Trump's Mar-a-Lago home in Florida. This development is significant because Trump has previously blamed the GSA for packing the boxes that contain the classified documents, only to later accuse Trump of essentially stealing them and using that as a pretext for sending the FBI to raid his Mar-a-Lago home in August 2022. It was a setup from the get-go, remarked Tom Fitton, founder of Judicial Watch. Again, we'll get into this a little bit later on. But yeah, it appears as though it was a complete setup. Hey, Trump, why don't you come grab these boxes? You know, it's all official, all in good order. We're the ones responsible for this, and we're telling you, take these boxes, put them in Mar-a-Lago. As soon as he does, they call up the FBI. He's got the boxes. He's got the classified information. Get him. Just one of the various ways that Donald Trump is being legally hamstrung and just illegally attacked. I mean, it's just as blatant as you can possibly get. And again, we'll get into that later. Meanwhile, the story that's causing all sorts of cacophony on Twitter comes from Politico. Quote, the far right's campaign to explode the population. Behind the scenes at the first NATAL conference, where a motley alliance is throwing out the idea of winning converts to their cause and trying to make their own instead. The threat, we are told here this weekend, is existential, biological, epoch-defining. Economies will fall, civilizations will fall, and it'll all happen because people aren't having enough babies. That's right, folks. It is now a far-right extremist position to want people to have babies. And the same people that are bringing in literally tens of millions of people over our southern border and into our nation are now frightened at the population exploding. They hate you, folks. I don't know how much more clearly they can make it. If anybody is advocating that you don't have babies, they hate you, full stop. I'm pretty sure this article fulfills one of the primary designators for genocide. I'm pretty sure this contributes to actual, by the UN definition, genocide, if you are encouraging or doing any measure to limit the babies being had by a native population. Again, we'll return to that in just a little bit. But yes, they are now saying it is a far-right extremist position to want to have babies. So let that sink in. Meanwhile, Biden's approval rating, lowest in history at this point in presidency. According to a new Gallup poll, President Biden's approval rating is the lowest ever for a president at this stage of his four-year term. Biden averaged 38.7% approval during his 13th quarter in office, which began on the 20th of January and ended on the 19th of April. Not one of the other nine residents elect presidents elected in their first term since Dwight Eisenhower had a lower 13th quarter approval rating. Donald Trump and Barack Obama, Biden's two predecessors in office, averaged 46.8 and 45.9 approval during the same period in their presidencies. The previous lowest rating belonged to George H.W. Bush in 1992, who still managed more than 40%. Nobody likes Biden. Long story short, nobody likes Biden except for the media and the political class and our foreign enemies. They love the guy. And sort of in tandem with this is this story. Donald Trump takes biggest lead ever over Joe Biden in CNN poll. Third-party candidates expand Trump lead. Former President Donald Trump has opened the biggest lead ever captured in the CNN poll of the American electorate, enjoying a six-point advantage over incumbent Democrat Joe Biden. Trump at 49% is 6 points ahead of Biden's 43% when the two are polled head-to-head. When third-party candidates like Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Dr. Jill Stein, and Cornel West are added to the field, Trump's lead over Biden grows to nearly double digits. In that multi-candidate scenario, Trump is at 42%, Biden's down to 33%, Kennedy at 16%, West at 4%, and Stein at 3%. That's a 9% lead for Trump nationally, an astounding number that, if true, would signal the former president is on track for an electoral college romp of Biden. But have they polled the mailboxes? Have they polled the drop boxes, though? I mean, that's who really decides who's our president. Have they polled the election workers who cheat to win the election? Will the outcome of the presidential election reflect the popularity of Donald Trump, or will it be rigged in all of our faces? I guess that's up to us to decide. Finally, we have this. Hundreds of students arrested at U.S. Gaza war protest and scuffles at UCLA. Police are out in full force, some using chemical irritants and things like tear gas and tasers to disperse students as more universities join the movement. Hundreds of students have been arrested across universities in the United States, with scuffles reported between pro-Israel and pro-Palestine demonstrators at UCLA as rallies for ceasefire in Gaza and divestment from companies linked to Israel spread across U.S. campuses. The pro-Palestinian encampment at the University of California at Los Angeles has expanded in recent days, but counter-protesters have also become increasingly vocal and visible. And of course, I told you last week that the obvious and inevitable outcome of sending police to clamp down on free speech ensured peaceful protest was that they would only expand, and they have done so quite rapidly. I think Alex Jones did some of the best work I've ever seen him do on Sunday. And there's a 30-minute clip going viral on Twitter right now as he breaks down the false dichotomy, problem, reaction, solution, Hegelian dialectic that the elite are using to cause the chaos and strife that then they will take advantage of in order to build the New World Order. I want to go to that video, and obviously we can't go to the whole thing. After all, I have to host this show. I can't just play Alex Jones clips, but this one is really worth playing a sizable chunk of. And it is a bit confusing, and obviously this can be used very easily to cause the strife and chaos that they're desirous of building up in this election year, getting the furnaces glowing so they can really hit the ground running in about 189 days when the election happens and Trump wins, and they're going to need their leftist hordes highly mobilized and organized in order to cause the civil war that they've been predicting for so long. And I have to say, seeing the way that a lot of these protests are changing, evolving, they're malleable, and they're becoming something other than they started as. If this was a peaceful protest, obviously I'm against the police going in and shutting it down, regardless of what it's about or who's doing it. But I think about it through the eyes of like a Palestinian who sees all these college kids gathering on campus and thinks, what a beautiful thing. My people have been without support for so long, been abused by Israel, and finally know, the American, these young American kids are getting together to support me, to support us, to support our struggle and help us, you know, survive this conflict. And then it's just the college students like, yeah, actually, we're here to destroy white men and bring about communism in America. And it's like, oh, okay. Okay, cool. So you're just co-opting my very real struggle in an actual war to impose your own utterly ridiculous, senseless, moronic political programs at home. So you're not just not helping the cause, you've co-opted it, and you're turning this energy away from its intended purpose and towards your utterly unrelated political goals domestically. Fantastic. Wonderful. Amazing. Thank you so much for your help. So this is what happens, I guess. Leftist, protest organizations, I mean, they may start off at least ostensibly with a positive and unifying or at least peaceful message. But it seems like more and more rapidly, these things just get completely co-opted and taken over by radical agents of division to destroy the American populace by divide and conquer. It is annoying. It's very annoying. It'd be nice to see a protest just stay on message for like a week. Wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that be cool? But no, can't happen. Won't happen. Hasn't happened. And I want to go now to this video. I'm going to play a good 10 minutes of it because you got to go watch the whole thing. And we'll just start at the top with clip number 5. Alex Jones put this out on Twitter. Go follow him at Real Alex Jones. And again, you just watch this 30-minute thing. I watched it like 3 times this morning. It's very brilliantly done, and it's Alex Jones at his finest. And let me just say before we go to it, 30 years on, 30 years in the business, and I have to say Alex Jones is putting out some of the best stuff he's ever done. I think the interview he did with Tucker Carlson following the State of the Union just a few months ago, it's probably the best interview I've ever seen him do with anybody ever. Maybe second only to Piers Morgan, but that was more because of its entertainment and you know, fiery, impassioned value rather than just the analytical value. But I think Alex is coming out with some of the best stuff he's ever come out with, which is like, who else can you say about that? Who else in any media, for that matter? Who's making the best movies they've ever made 30 years into their career? Who's making the best music they've ever made 30 years after they hit the charts? It really doesn't happen, but it does here with your support at InfoWarsStore.com. We wouldn't be here at all if it weren't for your support at InfoWarsStore.com. We rely on you. We rely on you. We depend on you, and we will go away without you. So thank you for going to InfoWarsStore.com. Please do continue to support us as we continue to refine and empower our message for all of humanity, resistance against the globalists, a rejection of the division that they rely on, and clear-sighted dedication to the goal of uniting the mass of humanity against the small number of globalist actors that do such a great job at dividing and conquering us. Here is Alex Jones, clip number 5. It's called Emergency Warning, Deep State Officially Planning to Launch Civil War. Let's watch.
Massive pro-Hamas demonstrations going on in Europe and the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, the UK. And again, this is a perfect dialectic. It's a perfect divide and conquer. I think a lot of the things Israel is doing are wrong. I'm against the systematic extermination of people in Gaza. I'm also against Biden giving $6 billion to Hezbollah, who then gave it to Hamas. Clearly, Israel stood down. This is about creating a climate for civil war across the Western world to bring in the New World Order. Soros and the Democrats are publicly funding the demonstrations, not just here, but also in Europe. It's a color revolution. Does that mean we support the police arresting press and innocent people? No. Does that mean we support the Islamists attacking police and overrunning them and attacking them and setting up their own autonomous zones? No. The point is that it is a giant manipulation where all the major sides are being funded to create the crisis. We have American flags being hauled down at major universities and Palestinian flags, Hamas flags being run up. this is a plan so that when Trump wins, they have a pretext to trigger violent civil unrest, burning cities, but on a much larger scale as we saw in the summer of mostly peaceful protest in 2000. And the Democrats have said in the Washington Post, the New York Times, that they are planning to have civil unrest if and when Trump is reelected, when he's president-elect, and cause such a crisis that the political system will then, via all these court cases, not let Trump get into office. And we're only 190 days out from this kicking off in earnest. It will build and build and build in the next 190 days, and then it will kick into high gear once Trump is reelected in a landslide and all the numbers. All the polls, even CNN polls, have Trump 10 points ahead. They are in full panic mode. They have huge Hollywood $350 million budget movies like Civil War. People go watch it and say, I don't know what it means. It's not really political. It doesn't say who's good and bad. Well, if you thought that, you are not conscious or have a very low IQ. I went and watched it, and it was absolutely crystal clear. All of the bad guys are white. The president is Trump. The multiracial Western alliance defeats them, and the American flag is taken down. The Washington monuments are blown up, and the one black person who's with the white supremacists, she's executed, a black woman. And then a black special ops woman kills Trump while he begs for his life. This is happening. And they will hype up some police shootings and some things that are triggered during these riots. You know, will come, whether they're justified or not. They will say they're not justified. And then that'll be the pretext of George Floyd 2.0 to burn down the country. It's a similar model in Europe, and using the media pushing the images of the dead children in Gaza, which is terrible. I'm not saying they shouldn't show them, but only showing that, not showing all the carnage other parts of the world, or the Uyghurs in death camps, or the 22 million dead from poison shots. None of that's to be seen. But, oh, playing on the heartstrings to then create this explosion. It's not about which side you're on. It's about seeing, like, the chemistry set, the reaction in the Hegelian dialectic, a problem, reaction, solution. You know, I made a lot of documentaries that reached hundreds of millions of people. And, of course, we've cut thousands of reports that have reached billions of people. But I want to make a documentary about not just false flags, but the history of governments getting together to have a war, not to defeat each other, but to keep the power structure in place. Now, there are a lot of wars, and I've never quantified, I don't think anybody knows the exact number, that are real wars between two countries, two tribes, two empires, two systems. I would say the majority in history have been that. I think that's fair to say. But there have been a lot of them where it's contrived. And on the surface, there's real people killing each other, and it's a real war. But at the end of the day, it's not. And I saw a film a few years ago called The King that was based on a true story 650 years ago, where you have the Norman, that are the French, who are the Vikings, who had conquered France and most of Europe, and William the Conqueror had come over 300 years before that, 400 years before that, and also conquered most of what's England today. So it was cousins, and I forget the actor's name. He's the guy that plays Paul Atreides in Dune. You guys just type in The King, Timothy Chalamet. But if you go watch that movie, in fact, it was so powerful because I'd read history books about it. I went and I watched it twice. I watched it once in the theater when it came out, I guess 8-9 years ago, and I watched it again just like 6 months ago.
Folks, again, you got to go watch this video. It's on X at Real Alex Jones. It's also on Van.video, of course. That was from last night's Sunday broadcast. It's called Emergency Warning, Deep State Officially Planning Civil War. And, I, you know, I feel a lot like how I felt with George Floyd. It's like, yeah, I'm against the thing that the protest ostensibly is about, just like we were against police brutality when it was unpopular, when nobody wanted to talk about it, when it was actually focused on authoritarianism and the way that the state uses violence to destroy opposition. There it is. Emergency warning. Deep state officially planning to launch American Civil War. You got to go. I mean, you got to go watch the whole thing. It really is incredible. I mean, wait till after American Journal, obviously. Stay tuned. We have a lot of stuff to cover, but he does break it down brilliantly. But let's go to another video here. This is, one of the things happening at these protests that makes me feel like I did under the George Floyd riots, where it's like, police kill people. It's like, yeah, isn't that terrible? Yeah, it is terrible. They'll shoot innocent people and get away with it. And like, yes, I've seen videos for years. Thank God we're finally talking about this. And it's like, yeah, and it's because the cops are white. And it's white supremacy. We have to destroy white people. It's like, well, wait, what? Hold on, what? Yeah, it's happening again. It's happening almost exactly the same way. Like, Israel's killing Palestinians. I know. Yeah, and it's brutal. It's horrific. They keep them in Gaza in this open-air camp. It's like, yes, finally, somebody's talking about this. It's like, yeah, so we need a socialist revolution and overthrow capitalism. It's like, what? How does this keep happening? Stick to the thing that everybody agrees is bad. Can we not do that? Can we really not have any legitimate protest against actual problems? Does it all have to devolve into intersectional bullcrap that divides people and destroys the original purpose? So here's a video from one of these things. This is at George Washington University. Here's what the Palestinian protest has devolved into. Let's watch.
This wretched system. There's only one way. Just like that chant that we enjoy so much, there is only one solution. Intifada revolution. We must have revolution so we can have a socialist reconstruction of the United States of America.
There you go. There's only one solution, Infatada revolution. We must have a revolution so we can have a socialist reconstruction of the United States of America. Okay, I thought you were trying to stop war, but you're actually trying to start one. Great. I thought we were on the same side for a second. Stupid me. One of the, in my opinion, most obvious examples of the Hegelian dialectic problem reaction solution is, of course, crime. Pretty simple. You let crime get out of control. Suddenly, we all have to live in a prison. You stop putting the criminals in jail. Suddenly, you have to lock up the socks and underwear behind plexiglass doors in order to prevent it from being stolen. And suddenly, we all live in a prison planet and have to have our faces scanned before entering into stores. It's very simple, and it's only accelerating. This is not necessary. The solution to crime is to arrest the criminals. Somehow they've tricked the American public into thinking that that's just not possible for some reason. God only knows how they get people to believe this stuff. It's very weird. It's very weird that you have this problem that's just, it's just obvious how, what it's caused by. Just could not be more obvious what causes the problem. Instead of just doing the thing that solves the problem, they introduce a whole host of tyrannical and authoritarian measures. It's just blatant. It's in your face. You can't see through this. Well, you're a leftist or a liberal, I guess. So let's go now to clip number one, as this video was posted with the question, are Western governments deliberately allowing crime to go out of control to bring in an AI surveillance system? To which the answer is yes, duh. Let's watch.
When seconds count,
that guy, he's just cutting people.
Criminals may try.
One Palisade Avenue for a stabbing in progress.
But there's no outrunning this camera network. Controlled not by human hands, but by computer software. This is the Yonkers Police Department's real-time artificial intelligence center.
Between the use of AI, as well as our personnel in the field and in the aware realm, we're able to multitask and get a ton of information in a short period of time.
Max Goldberg went from walking the beat to crime control, working in the nerve center with 400 cameras. watching New York State's third largest city. Goldberg says the system will pinpoint a problem without his intervention. He credits the AWARE network with recently helping find a missing girl with autism by inputting her description.
Wearing a red top and black bottoms.
And just 3 minutes after the 911 call,
I was able to see her crouching down behind a vehicle, trying to hide from people.
From a fire to a stabbing rampage, the system's AI capability recognizes anything out of the ordinary, often flagging it before 911 is called.
This kind of changes the game. As the call is coming in, our officers in here can pull up cameras in the area and direct the right resources to the right locations.
The dispatchers will be using it.
Yonkers Police Detective Sergeant Frank D. DiMizio is confident about the future of crime fighting.
As a detective, are you threatened at all by this technology?
I think that most of the Yonkers Police Department welcomes this technology with open arms.
Oh, yeah, I bet. I bet artificial intelligence enables active policing, Yonkers PD. Isn't that amazing? You'll have this highly coordinated, just super technologically advanced network of cameras with empowered by AI to see crimes as they're happening in real time, to dispatch police officers who will arrest the criminal, take them to the courthouse, and then they'll be released and not charged because of the Bail Reform Acts. Right. So what are we doing again exactly? What is this? Like, oh, yeah, we've got this really complicated system of cameras to, you know, see the guy that we let out 100 times this year commit another crime. Don't worry, we have it on HD this time. Don't worry, the AI is really good at picking up the next crime this guy does after we let him out a week ago for the last crime that he did. And what is the point of this? Honestly, problem, reaction, solution. It is as simple as that, and it's constant, and it applies to basically everything we cover. Fund, you know, insane protests to get out of control and cause a bunch of problems. Bring in the free speech controls. Let the criminals out of prison. Reform the justice system. Allow crime to explode. Bring in the AI surveillance. It's just time and time again, over and over. Crash the economy. Bring in the welfare state. There's not a topic that this doesn't apply to. And just happens over and over. I don't know why we can't see through it. How we can't just apply the obvious solutions that we know work. As evidenced by literally centuries of human civilization. But no. We're going to have to empower AI to spy on us all the time. So we can have really, really good footage. And really, you know, quick reactions to the crimes that we allow to happen without doing anything to stop them. Incredible, isn't it? Absolutely mindless. All this is utterly ridiculous. But let's get into Joe Biden, shall we? Should we get into Joe Biden? Should we see what he's up to? I want to play clip three here. I think we've played this before, but it's worth it just to set the stage to remind you of who Biden is. He is nobody. He is nothing. He is everything. He is Puerto Rican and black and Hispanic. He is a champion of civil rights and in stern opposition to busing. I mean, everything he says is a lie, basically, and it's sad to see so many people falling for his crap. Let's go now to clip number three. Here's Biden telling you everything about his life that apparently he's lived a million lives. I mean, maybe he's a reincarnation type of guy. Maybe he's actually lived these lives in various forms, and this is just his latest manifestation, because according to Joe Biden, he's been everybody, everywhere, all the time. Let's watch.
I was sort of raised in the Puerto Rican community. I had a very close relationship with the Greek American community, for real. I am Joe Bidenopoulos.
I grew up in a heavily Irish Catholic community in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and a heavily Italian Polish community.
When I say I got raised in the black church, he knows I'm not kidding. The Persian culture is amazing. As a student of the Persian culture,
I probably went to shul more than many of you.
I come out of the black community.
The background of my family is Irish American, not fundamentally unlike the Palestinian people.
I
you might say, raised in synagogues in my state.
Everyone in town was either Polish or Italian. I grew up feeling self-conscious. My name didn't end in an SKI.
I was raised in a neighborhood where I felt self-conscious. My name didn't end in O.
That's kind of how I was raised, like so many Americans of Irish heritage.
In HBCU, in your home state, Mr. President.
Let me tell you, forget about it. That's right. That's where I got raised, man.
Just like rabbis, synagogues, and Jewish community centers in your hometown, and that's the tradition I got raised.
Hard-working people, the middle class, the neighborhoods I got raised in.
I was raised on GM.
I was raised by Danny Noe.
I was raised by a righteous Christian.
I got raised on automobiles.
He's a car? Wait, he's a car too? You thought Barack Obama being the first black president was impressive. Joe Biden is the world's first Puerto Rican, Italian, Polish, Jewish, Christian car to be president. It's really incredible. It's really something else. Yeah, we'll go to some more clips here on the other side of Joe Biden enjoying the whatever it's called, correspondence dinner, where the slavish devotees in the media gather to have Joe Biden wave his finger at them and tell them they have to be more sycophantic. They have to support him even harder than they already do, despite the fact that they have nothing but slathering approval for everything he's ever says, despite the fact that, as you see there, everything he says is contradictory to everything else he says, and he's a ridiculous liar that should be not president, but just a big clown that we all laugh at. But instead, they support him endlessly, and then they get together to pat each other on the head for how, you know, good they are. I don't know how we're going to get to all this news. I mean, it really is unbelievable. It's just the bewildering array of topics to cover. I mean, it's wild. Just in front of me here, right? I got the political stuff with it basically being revealed that the entire scam about the documents trial against Donald Trump was total entrapment. I got the far left at Politico complaining that Americans want to have babies. I got videos from Naomi Wolf talking about the Pfizer shot affecting newborns and fertility. We've got stories about the economy with a Chipotle double steak bowl, now $39 in California. So in my lifetime, went from the average lunch at a fast food place being $5. By the time I was in college, it was like $10. And became about $20. Now we're up to $40 in some places, which is horrifying. EU approves severe limits on cash transactions as we move towards the digital currency that will give them total control over our ability to feed ourselves or fund ourselves or do anything without the approval of the banks. We also have stories about the way medical schools are keeping out the top scoring students in high school, not allowing them to go on to fulfill their dream of becoming doctors because it's not diverse enough, meaning that, sure, the entire healthcare profession might shudder and collapse under the weight of incompetent doctors, but hey, at least there'll be black doctors, right? As I'm mentioning, the Ukraine war or the war in Gaza or illegal immigration, just costing us billions of dollars in healthcare alone that we're providing to these foreign citizens of a foreign state, one foreign state or another. And then Ireland is like erupting into civil war with small towns of like 3,000 people rioting because they don't want 500 unvetted African adult men being dropped off at their community center and being shut down brutally by the police force there. It's a lot. There's a lot to get into. So we'll try to do that. But of course, I wouldn't have to. This shouldn't even be my job. We have a massive, well-funded, and incredibly powerful media complex. But they spend all of their time trying to tell you not to worry about these things, trying to convince you that these things are either unimportant or natural consequence of progress and therefore inevitable and not worth fighting against. And of course, slathering over the boots of the tyrants who are bringing all of this about. So let's go to a couple of the clips from Joe Biden's speech during the correspondence dinner last night. First, just in perhaps a, you know, ironically perfect display of disinformation, Joe Biden repeating a blatant lie about Donald Trump in front of the entire media and being cheered for it. Clip 14 is Biden repeating the bloodbath hoax at the Correspondents' Dinner at the White House.
He is their revenge and retribution. When in God's name have you heard of another president say something like that? And he promised a bloodbath when he loses again. We have to take this seriously. 8 years ago, you could have written off it as just Trump talk, but no longer.
Economic bloodbath. An economic bloodbath, Joe. It's kind of perfect, though. It's kind of exactly as it should be. Joe Biden standing in front of the entire press corps, just repeating a blatant and obvious lie about Donald Trump, and all of them, you know, nodding along seriously. Of course, Joe Biden's got his squinty eyes on today. He's got squinty eyes. He thinks it makes him look serious. It doesn't. It makes him look like the, you know, angry old man puppet from, was it Jeff Durham? What was that guy's name?
Joe Biden, this Trump guy is going to kill everybody.
Incredible, isn't it? Let's go to clip 13 now. Here's him joking about weaponizing the justice system against Donald Trump. It's not a joke, though. Let's watch.
I had a great stretch since the State of the Union. Well, Donald has had a few tough days lately. You might call it stormy weather. What the hell?
Oh, yeah, because of Stormy Daniels, because of the... Because of the case you're trying to send him to jail for 4 years over, despite the fact that it's a less serious charge than what Hillary Clinton was charged with. And she got away with the DNC paying a $100,000 fine. Yeah, hilarious. Very funny. Again, I wonder, I mean, did Joseph Stalin do this? Like, is this type of thing he did? I imagine he would have. Although he seemed more serious. It seemed in the old days tyrants were just sort of upfront about what they did. It's like more insulting now. He's just using the Justice Department to destroy his political enemy and then making a joke about it and the whole press corps laughing along with him. It's all horrible. We'll go to a longer clip now. Here's Joe Biden ending his speech, and you can just... You just feel it as he talks about these. Again, just everybody in that room is just a sycophantic lapdog of Joe Biden. I mean, they do everything they possibly can to frame his abysmal failure of a presidency. I mean, nobody's falling for it. That's the good news. The good news is the people sitting in that room are the most unpopular people in the world at this point. So, of course, they're getting together and pat each other on the back. Like they've done something wonderful. Like you've just unified everyone in the world against you because of your relentless lies. And you put on a suit and tie and go celebrate it and clink your champagne glass as if you've achieved something. It's such a ridiculous illusion that they're all participating in. Joe Biden's approval rating lowest in history at this point in the presidency, despite, again, the relentless support from the press. You can just imagine how low it would be if they gave him the Trump treatment. I mean, just imagine that. He has a lower approval rating than Donald Trump at the same point in his presidency. Every single day under the Trump presidency, you had the most outrageous libel being printed about Trump. The most insane calumny just despicable lies about Donald Trump every single day. And yet he remained more popular than Joe Biden, who gets nothing but cover from the press. So that shows how what giant failures they are. So this is the, you know, this is like the Titanic's, it's like the Titanic's, you know, to architecture union. I don't know who builds engineers union. And holding a 5-course meal as the ship goes down, celebrating what a brilliant job they've done as the cold water starts to creep up their legs, right? Do they know that they're going down? Do they really believe their own crap? Or do they understand just how despised and worthless they all are? It's a valid question, I think. But let's go now to clip number two. Here's Joe Biden calling on journalists to defend democracy. Let's watch.
Move past the horse race numbers and the gotcha moments and the distractions, the sideshows that have come to dominate and sensationalize our politics. And focus on what's actually at stake. I think in your hearts you know it was at stake. The stakes couldn't be higher. Every single one of us has a role to play, a serious role to play, in making sure democracy endures, American democracy. I have more my role, but with all due respect, so do you. In the age of disinformation, credible information that people can trust is more important than ever. And that makes you, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, makes you more important than ever. So tonight, I'd like to make a toast. To a free press, to an informed citizenry, to an America where freedom and democracy endure. God bless America.
Can't you imagine? Can't you just see them now? These journalists who just spout ridiculous lies all day, every day. Tearing up a little bit. We're the press. We're responsible for an informed America. There's our leader, Joe Biden, slurring his way through the final sentence. I honestly want to know, did he... I mean, how many words did he actually get out without a problem there? I think more than half of the words he tried to say there came out wrong. Yeah. All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Every day we move farther from possibly the greatest crime ever committed against humanity, the binary weapon system of the lab-created COVID virus released on purpose, and the corresponding vaccine, so-called vaccine, a poison gene-altering death shot. Everyone involved in this is fairly well known to anybody paying attention. It's not exactly vague as to who put this stuff in motion, who organized it. They're the people currently in charge of our DNI, people like Avril Haines, who was the chair at the Event 201 conference where they planned all of this out. People like Dr. Anthony Fauci, people like Peter Daszak and his CIA handlers. The true scale and scope of the damage done to humanity is still unfolding before us. And Dr. Naomi Wolf, joined a panel of experts at the wellness company's Spike Symposium last June to break down Pfizer's attempt to cover up adverse effects of its experimental COVID mRNA vaccines on fertility in newborns. The story and video can be found at Infowars.com. Here is Dr. Naomi Wolf explaining not only how these shots damaged fertility and damaged the health of newborns, but how Pfizer knew about it and covered it up. Let's watch.
There's a section of Pfizer documents where there's an 80% miscarriage rate of the women whom they're following to term. And they happen to lose 236 out of the 270 records of pregnant women that they have. But the ones that they keep, 80% lose their babies. And then later on, and this is report 69, and Dr. Walensky resigned 5 days after we posted report 69, it shows that Pfizer knew that babies in utero were being exposed to the vaccine. In their words, the babies were dying through transplacental exposure. Mm-hmm. But they knew that, and they knew that they were poisoning breast milk, and that the lipid nanoparticles, the mRNA, and presumably the spike was getting into the breast milk and causing convulsions and deaths. And apropos of what Dr. Thorpe has found and what you brought up about problems with newborns, I interviewed a midwife named Ellen Jasmer, who's finding what is in the Pfizer documents from 2 years before. They knew that newborns would have, some of them, air sacs between their tiny lungs and their tiny chest walls, and this would cause respiratory distress. They knew it. It's in the Pfizer documents. And yet, 2 years later, Ellen Jasmer is finding babies go home, they seem fine, they're coming back because there's an air pocket between their tiny lungs and their chest walls.
Absolutely horrifying. Again, you can find that story at InfoWars. Dr. Naomi Wolf explains how Pfizer knew newborns and fertility adversely affected by COVID jabs. You know, there's the classic phrase, don't attribute to malice what can be explained by incompetence. This cannot be explained by incompetence. And the question is constantly asked, well, is it just incompetence or is it deliberately done? When you have the studies showing this and you cover them up, when you know that what you're doing is causing horrific damage to newborns in utero or through breast milk, and yet you continue to not just push it but mandate it in some cases, it's not a debate anymore. We know. We have the answer. A crime has been committed. A mass murder has been committed against all of us right in front of us. And it seems like the Japanese are the only ones actually even concerned about this. Perhaps we'll go to that video on the other side, the Reese Report. Or maybe we'll move on to any of the other outrageous attacks against humanity itself being leveled from the globalist. This is The Resistance, folks. Stay tuned. We'll be back on the other side with more videos, more stories. I think before we totally move on from the topic of the media and their sycophantic loyalty to the regime, the party, the establishment, I want to play another video here. It's not just the mainstream legacy media that's fulfilling this role. It's also very much the purview of TikTokers and Twitter celebrities and all sorts of other alternative media, social media outlets and content creators that have been co-opted and are doing the will of the regime, selling their souls for 30 pieces of silver. And of course, there's no depth to which the regime will not plunge. In this case, hiring a OnlyFans creator that is porn star to spread political propaganda, paying her to do it, but also telling her to disguise that fact and not tell anybody she's being paid, which I think would represent a crime. I think that might be a crime, actually. If only nobody was above the law. If only the wonderful sounding slogans from the left actually had any impact whatsoever on the function of our judicial system. They don't, and they literally get away with anything. It's infuriating. Let's go to clip number 9. OnlyFans creator Farah Khalidi says she was paid by the Biden administration to spread political propaganda. Let's watch.
I started TikTok for law school, and then you know, female privilege, life is so easy for a, woman. Obviously, I lucked out. I'm just kidding. I lucked out. And then, TikTok was basically full-time for me. I was taking ads by the time I graduated college from, the Biden administration and Planned Parenthood and, dating apps and stuff. So it was, fully financially, sustainable.
So you were getting the Biden administration was buying ads from you?
Yeah, I was doing full-on political propaganda.
And they would just – oh, really? With, what kind of, Biden-created – 10 million jobs.
Yeah,
this
year. Honestly, and the funny thing is, they're like, "Do not disclose this is an ad," because you know they're like, "Technically, it's not a product. So you don't have to disclose it's an ad," because I think they just wanted like some edgy girl of color to just tell people, like, when they nominated like Ketanji Brown Jackson, they're like, "Can you say, like, as a person of color, you know, that you feel reflected?" And it's like a white woman emailing this to me, and she's like giving me this script, and I'm like, "No." And she's like, "Please." And I'm like, "No, I'll say, I'll like talk about the news of it, but I'm not going to be like, I'm not going to have a white person tell me to be like, you know, this is how I feel as a person of color." Like, it's just so, I think that blackballed me slightly on like, you know, political propaganda.
So the Biden administration sees, oh, here's this young.
Yeah. I mean, they use like a conduit. It's not like, you know what I mean? It's not Biden, but it's like Biden. It's like a third party. You know what I mean? It's like a media company that's doing it on his behalf. I'm not blaming him for this.
Yeah. And the message is like, because you're a dark-skinned woman, you will be inspired by Ketanji Brown Jackson and all the kids should support her.
Yeah, they're like, basically as like another black person, just say that like you feel reflected by Ketanji. I'm like, no, I'll talk about like Ketanji's background and her accomplishments, but like I never, you know what I mean? Like I'm not gonna say like the corny stuff. Even if it was a brown person emailing it to me, I'm like, no, that's not like how I feel. Like I don't look at like Ketanji and feel like, wow.
Yeah, yeah. See, yeah.
OnlyFans performer Farah Khalidi says she was blackpilled after making political propaganda ads for Biden administration. Just no legitimate support whatsoever. The popularity of Joe Biden is just so astroturfed and faked. And they have to know it. So like clearly they're gonna rig the election, right? I mean that's my takeaway from this. Like they know how unpopular he is. Instead of doing anything to change the policies that make him unpopular, they pay minorities to trick other minorities into thinking that he's popular so that when they rig the election, it seems legitimate. That's how it feels to me. That's what it seems like from my perspective. And of course, Biden's approval rating lowest in history at this point in his presidency, despite all of those beautiful brown women being paid to talk about the other brown women in his in his administration. Yeah. So let's talk about one of the biggest stories. OnlyFans channel to capture key pervert vote. What website is this? Is this Babylon Bee or something? Yeah. But it's not untrue. I mean, literally the only thing the Democrats have now is abortion and gay rights and trans rights. Like, if it's not for sexual promiscuity and deviance, they have literally nothing. It's crazy. It's crazy in a world where our economy is collapsing and people can't afford food and all of the jobs created last year went to non-Americans and actual American citizens lost hundreds of thousands of jobs that year, and 90% of the jobs actually created were part-time, not full-time, but actually people getting second jobs because the economy is so bad. At a time when you have tens of millions of people crossing over the border completely unhindered to flood the United States and cost us billions upon billions of dollars. The only thing that the Biden administration is concerned on about at all is abortion. Making sure you can kill your baby. They actually make it really easy. All you have to do is get vaccinated. Forget Roe versus Wade. Just go get vaccinated. That'll abort your baby. Problem solved. Absolutely incredible. Speaking of babies having babies, just what is wrong with the left? And how, like, again, how do people not see this? It's so blatant. It's so obvious. It's so just right in people's faces. And this is really the big frustration with everything that we cover here. And I've said it a million times, but like, it used to be that we had to uncover this stuff. It used to be that we had to try to tell people, try to make people aware of what was really going on because they weren't saying it. Like, the powers that be weren't open about what they were doing. You had to read between the lines a little bit, or you had to research their own documents, their own white papers, try to get this out to people. But now they're just saying it. They're just out in the open telling people how horrible they are. Do people not care? I mean, just what is wrong with them? The headline from Politico that's causing a big firestorm on X right now, the far right's campaign to explode the population. Behind the scenes of the first NATO conference, where a motley alliance is throwing out the idea of winning converts to their cause and trying to make their own instead. Which, what does that even mean? What it is is a projection. What it is a projection from the left. Because if you actually look at the population projections, this is from Andrew Torba at Based Torba on Twitter, of course, the founder of Gab. The green is the nation you were robbed of. The red is the invasion. Here's the population increase that would have occurred from the 194 million people in the U.S. in 1965 without new immigration. So here this chart begins at 1965 when the Hart-Celler Immigration Act was passed, opening up the floodgates. You can see that we would have had a moderate increase and then perhaps a leveling off around, you know, where we are now, at around 250 million. This is the explosion. This is the population explosion in America, and it's entirely immigration. The red is the growth caused by new immigrants and their descendants. The orange line shows what total population would be if annual immigration was cut by around half. So even if we cut annual immigration around half, it barely makes a difference. We've already been invaded. We are already outnumbered hugely. Regular Americans, any race, color, and creed, just actual American citizens whose families were here before 1965. So U.S. population growth, this chart shows U.S. population growth beginning in 1965 when our population was only 194 million. Total U.S. population numbers are in boxes here. The top line shows the actual U.S. population growth from 1965 to 2015 and the Census Bureau projection from 2015 to 2060 based on current immigration and fertility trends. So the people that brought us this are now saying the right wing wants a population explosion by having babies. The side of the aisle whose primary and number one and an overriding concern seems to be bringing in immigrants by the tens of millions are telling you that the right wing is unable to recruit to its cause. Now it's just having babies to try to win power. When they have deliberately brought in tens of millions of people to overthrow legacy Americans and impose their rule through illegal immigration. Like, it's just so absurd. It's so ridiculous. And I guess, I mean, you wonder how they pull this off. You wonder what could possibly be behind people taking any of this seriously. And I think I might have an answer. I think I might. It's not that complicated. I think people are dumb. I think the vast majority of the American population is just, frankly, hugely stupid. I'm sorry. I'll show you the video and you'll understand why I'm saying this. Let's go to clip number 12 here. Here's a guy who's so confident in his intelligence, he's got a freaking podcast and he's out there displaying, broadcasting his stupidity for everybody to see. That should give you an impression of where we're at in this country. I think they get away with this stuff because Americans just quite literally don't have the cognitive ability to, like, even understand what's going on. They should. I mean, it shouldn't take much. Honestly, it shouldn't take much. You've got these people telling you it's a far-right extremist stance to want to have babies, saying that having babies is some sort of there's some sort of ulterior motive. It's some sort of sick plot to bring power to the far right and explode the population while they're simultaneously bringing in tens of millions of people. I mean, how do they get away with this? Maybe it's because this is the level of intelligence that we're dealing with. Clip number 12.
People that say it's a quarter tell.
Why?
That's some of those.
Okay, what's a quarter?
I didn't learn this till this year. A quarter doesn't mean 25 minutes. It's a quarter past 9:25.
Completely wrong. Completely wrong.
What is it? So it's 15?
Correct.
What? Tell me what the... How does that make sense? Explain that to me.
Because a quarter... You're thinking straight to currency.
Yes.
A quarter is a fourth. That's all a quarter is.
Well, okay.
A quarter is a fourth of anything. It's a fourth of anything. Don't think of the actual...
I don't understand that.
A fourth. A quarter of 10 is 2.5.
It's 2.5. 25. Where is this 15 coming? Yeah, where is 15 coming from?
60. An hour is 60 minutes. So okay. If you break it into fourths, a quarter
25,
is 15.
50. When did we start speaking in currency? Like, when I say it's $1.30 until 18? What am I supposed to, like, what is... It's $1.30 till noon? Who are we?
It's $1.30 till 18. If you fused currency and military time, people are going to think you just walked out of a spaceship.
Yeah. Maybe that's why they get away with this stuff. It's just very simple. It's a very simple concept. So simple. Now, if you're confused by this, I think maybe you could get through to him by... Maybe he understands half. Maybe a quarter is too obscure. It's too occult. It's too complicated, a quarter. Quarter point? What? You said half. What's half an hour? Half an hour is 30 minutes. He gets that, right? I don't know. So, I'm looking for something. I'm looking for something that can help me understand how they get away with this. How they even write this sort of stuff, thinking that people are going to go along with it. Maybe everyone's that dumb. I don't know. You know, a lot of times we show these videos of people being dumb, but it's like people on the street that are, approached by some guy with a microphone and asked a question. And while some of their answers are just unjustifiable, like you can't come up with an excuse for them. Yeah, maybe sometimes it's like, well, they're on the spot. Sometimes when I try to do simple math on the show, it's like, it's there's a lot of pressure and suddenly your brain doesn't work quite right. I get that. But this is this guy's podcast. Like, he is confident enough in his intelligence to sit behind a microphone on purpose and sit there and say this sort of stuff. So it doesn't bode well. It just doesn't bode well for our ability to counteract any of this nonsense. Because all you need is like a very moderate intelligence to understand what's going on here. But if you don't have that, then they're going to get away with this. So let's get into this article from Michael Cruz. The far right's campaign to explode the population. The far right's campaign to explode the population. I mean, should we just embrace this? That's the thing. If everything that prevents the total collapse of civilization is considered far right, and we can point out how ridiculous that is, how it's not a far right position to want people to have babies. Like, this is just so insane. It's like, it just makes me sad we even have to say this. But maybe it is. I mean, at this point, maybe this is far right. That the culture and the media shifted so far left that just basic humanity is far right at this point. And that's what this is, basic humanity. Humanity in its simplest and most pure form, the having of children, is far right. Okay? The threat, we're told here this weekend, is existential, biological, epoch-defining. Economies will fall, civilizations will fall, and it will all happen because people aren't having enough babies. Yes. Yes, obviously. What do you think is going to happen if people don't have enough babies? Well, they know what's going to happen. People in Nigeria are having enough babies, so we'll bring them in. It's population replacement. It's the great replacement. The entire global financial system, the value of your money, every asset you might buy with money is defined by leverage, which means the value depends on growth, says Kevin Dolan, a 37-year-old father of six from Virginia.
Every country in the developed world and most countries in the developing world face long-term population decline at a level that makes growth impossible to maintain, which means we're sitting on the bubble of all bubbles. Despite this grim prognosis, the mood is optimistic. In early December, a few weeks before Christmas, the 100-odd people who flocked to Austin for the first NATAL conference are here to come up with solutions. Though relatively small as conferences go, NATALCon has attracted attendees who are almost intensely dedicated to the cause of raising the U.S. birth rate. The broader natalist movement has been gaining momentum lately in conservative circles, where anxieties over falling birth rates have converged with fears of rising immigration, and counts Elon Musk, who has nearly a dozen children, and Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban among its proponents. Natalism is often about more than raising birth rates, although that's certainly one of its aims. For many in the room, the ultimate goal is total social overhaul, a culture with which child rearing is paramount. Which, you know, understanding just basic modern history, would just be a return to norm. It would be a undoing of the total social overhaul, which has destroyed the world, largely, made many functions of our society obsolete or ineffective, and just getting back to a world in which, yes, the concerns of the citizen is actually not just, you know, is actually considered by the government, not deliberately undercut by the government. Ed Krasenstein just posted this chart on X. U.S. fertility rate, 1.6, is the lowest in the century. Blame it on economic inequality, poverty, and a high cost of living. It's all of those things. And, of course, people are pointing out, you know, Elon Musk retweeted Eva Vilar's speech about the Great Replacement, which we've covered on InfoWars. Alex Jones did a big breakdown of it yesterday, so we won't go to it here. But talking about the Great Replacement, Elon Musk says, the thing about the Great Replacement is it doesn't confront the challenge of falling birth rates. But of course it does. All of these things are intertwined. All of these things are different facets of the same process taking place. You bring in immigrants, you depress wages, you make it harder to start a family. You have immigrants take high-paying jobs through H-1B visas, and suddenly people that would be starting a family out of college with a nice job, with a house, find themselves on uncertain ground, feeling like they're not in a place where they can start a family and feel secure in doing so. So obviously immigration affects the birth rate in a variety of different ways. I mean, in a huge variety of different ways. So the problem with Great Replacement is that it fails to address the foundational issue of low birth rates. Record low birth rates are leading to population collapse in Europe and even faster population collapse in most of Asia. Immigration is so low in Asia that there's no replacement going on. The countries are simply shrinking away. If this doesn't turn around, then any country on earth with low birth rates will become empty of people and fall into ruin like the remains of many that we see of many long dead civilizations. Except there's the Great Replacement going on. Except everywhere outside of the first world, in Asia and Europe, is exploding in population because the medical and, you know, agricultural advancements of the last century have led to a massive rise in the birth rates of everyone in Africa, everyone in South America, everyone in Southeast Asia. It's absolutely huge. So what's the solution here? There's a variety. I don't think it actually is that complicated. I think it's about addressing the, you know, various contributing factors to the low birth rate, one of which is propaganda, another of which is birth control and the proliferation of that. Abortion is obviously huge. I mean, just consequence-free sex in general is contributing to this. I think propaganda may be the biggest issue in all of this, but the cost, mostly the economic situation, the fact that you have a really hard time supporting a family on a single wage these days, which means women have to have jobs, which means women are more likely to go to college, which means they're more likely to put off having a baby until later in life, meaning they're less likely to have more babies, more likely to have fewer. But I mean, obviously the real source of the collapse of birth rates in general. Oh, right. And also I forgot to mention the plastics that are making people infertile and the vaccines that are killing babies in the womb. and the atrazine and pesticides that are affecting people's hormones to an outrageous degree. I mean, there's lots of reasons, and we could confront these. And we could also just do something simple like what Hungary's doing and saying, yeah, you don't pay taxes if you have kids. You don't pay income tax if you have three kids. Or the government will pay off your house if you have four kids. As simple economic incentives that have boosted Hungary's birth rate hugely. There's already been a successful pilot of this program. And we could just implement that. It's not complicated. It's just confronting the evil. That's literally it. I guess before we move on to some of the protests happening around the country and the way that they're being used to usher in anti-free speech laws in a variety of different ways, there's an interesting paragraph in this story, the far right's campaign to explode the population. They talk about the wide variety of right-wingers that attend this conference, saying the ideology such as it exists, you know, to want people to have babies, is far from cohesive, and factions of the new right are frequently in disagreement. But this weekend, these roughly aligned groups, from the libertarian-adjacent tech types to the Heritage Foundation staffers, along with some who likely have no connection with traditional conservative or far-right causes at all, have found a unifying cause in natalism. Which, yeah, translation, you don't have to be far-right, conservative, Republican, or any political bent to want human life to flourish. It turns out that attacking somebody's very existence turns out to be a unifying cause to oppose. At first glance, this conference might seem like something new, a case for having kids that is rooted in a critique of market-driven forces that shape our lives and shifts that have made our culture less family-oriented. Yeah, that's what it is, actually, yes. As Dolan tells me in an email, Dolan's, I guess, the leader of this conference, declining birth rates are primarily the fault of a, quote, default middle-class life path offered by our educational system and corporate employers, which Dolan says is an obvious competition with starting a family. These systems, he believes, have created a consumer-driven, hedonistic society that requires its members to be slavishly devoted to their office jobs, often at the expense of starting a family. Which seems to me, first and foremost, like a left-wing cause. I mean, it fits in with the left-wing paradigm. At least it used to when I was growing up. Used to be the left wing that would complain about life in cubicles, about being forced to be a corporate slave. I don't want to just be a corporate, you know, a gear in the machine. It's dehumanizing. It's devaluing us to the lowest common denominator. It's putting a price tag on human life. I thought left wingers understood this. If you say, yeah, I totally agree, and it makes it hard to have babies, they're like, oh, wow, I didn't realize you were a fascist. It's literally gotten no worse, no better since the 90s in Office Space. If anything, it's gotten worse. They've just learned to dress up their corporatocracy in the language of the left to get the left to fall for opposing the people fighting against it. These systems, he believes, have created a consumer-driven, hedonistic society that requires its members to be slavishly devoted to their office jobs, often at the expense of starting families. I guess by arguing against this, arguing against him, you're basically in favor of the slavish devotion to the office job. It's like, no, actually, corporatism is good. Dedication to GDP and the bottom line is better than dedication to the humanity it's supposed to support. Over the course of the conference, the seemingly novel arguments for having children fade and give way to a different set of concerns. Throughout the day, speakers and participants hint at the other aspects of modern life that worry them about future generations in the U.S. and other parts of the West. Divorce, gender integration, wokeness, declining genetic quality. Yeah, all of those things contribute to the collapse of birth rates. Yeah. On top of just the general dehumanization that we're experiencing, the general separation from our fellow human beings that takes place, That is an inevitable and measurable consequence of diversity as well. I mean, decades ago, they had studies that said, yeah, the more diverse a neighborhood, the less likely people are to vote, the less likely people are to participate in community activities, the less likely people are to volunteer, the less likely people are to meet and spend time with their neighbors. It's just a natural consequence. If you are surrounded by people that aren't like you and don't have the same interests as you or don't even speak the same language as you, yeah, you're not going to commingle and meet people and build relationships that become the foundation of families in which babies are had. Everybody's atomized. Everybody's an individual. Everybody's lost in a sea of, you know, Tinder swipes and pornography. Obviously, all of these things contribute. It's one of the ironies, I guess, of the modern world that the more openly hedonistic and sexualized our media and general culture is, the less sex the average person is having. Meaning the less connection they're having with their fellow human beings. So obviously that's not the only connection, but it is it's like the culmination, it's like the ultimate expression. Many of the speakers and attendees see natalism as a way of reversing these changes. Well, these aren't just changes. The natalism is the thing that's been destroyed by this collapse. And by reversing the causes of the collapse, you increase the birth rate and the prominence of natalism. The conference suggests there's a simple way around the problem of majority rule, breeding a new majority that looks and sounds just like them. Just what is wrong with these people? Honestly, just what is wrong with these people? What is wrong with these people? You sit there and you go, hey, our entire society seems dedicated to abolishing the family. Seems like every new development makes it that much more difficult to either meet people you want to start a family with or to start a family or to afford a family once you have one. It seems like from the economy to the just cultural propaganda that we see is uniformly directed at destroying the middle class, destroying the family unit. And we're against that because it has a huge number of incumbent problems with that change. And in these people's minds, what that means is that some sort of sick eugenics breeding program to create the ideal white race. Like, what are they even talking about? What are they even talking about? It's like they know that their position is sort of sick, right? It's like they know that they can't just say that they hate people having babies because that's like saying you hate breathing air. It's like a suicidally bizarre thing to hate. And so, like, in their own minds, they have to justify it. Just what would compel somebody to write an article like this? It's kind of sickening. Throughout it all, some religious conservative cultures have continued to see raising large broods as a divine mandate. Broods. Because we're just animals, remember? White supremacists, meanwhile, have framed their project as a way of ensuring a future for white children, as declared by David Lane, a founding member of the white nationalist group The Order. You want to have babies? What are you, a Nazi? You want to have a big family? You want to be a mother with lots of little kids running around you, bringing infinite joy to your every hour? You might as well throw a Hitler salute. You might as well tattoo a swastika on your forehead, you white supremacist. These people are sick. And we all know the cure. Having babies. Having lots of beautiful little babies. All right, welcome back, folks. We're going to go ahead and open up the phone lines for your calls throughout the final hour of today's program. The number to dial is 1-877-789-2539. 1-877-789-2539. Give us a call here at the American Journal, 1-877-789-2539. We'll go to your calls very shortly. I also want to remind you to go to InfoWarsStore.com to support everything that we do here and take advantage of our incredible sales to get fantastic products at ridiculously low prices. Brain Force Ultra, the liquid tincture form of Brain Force Plus, is now available. And actually, it's not just the form of Brain Force Plus. It's even better. It is Brain Force Ultra. That's 40% off. Nitric Boost, 40% off. Ultimate Fish Oil, also 40% off. And the Ultimate Fish Oil is a great one. If you take any supplement, it's pretty high likelihood that it's fish oil. Why not get the best quality available at InfoWarsStore.com at the best price available, as it is now 40% off at InfoWarsStore.com. And we thank you so much for keeping us on the air and in the fight against the suicidal cult of globalism. Now, I was going to go in this segment to some of these articles about the way that the anti-Israel, pro-Palestine, pro-peace protests on college campuses are being co-opted and subverted and then used as an excuse to destroy the First Amendment. And luckily, right as I was about to go to it, I got a DM on Twitter from Chief Trumpster with a whole thread about various nefarious groups carrying this stuff out. But first, let's just go to some of these stories. This from the Daily Beast. Pro-Israel agitator shouts kill the Jews and gets everyone else arrested. Northeastern University had around 100 peaceful protesters arrested on Saturday at its Boston campus pro-Palestine encampment, claiming there had been reports of protesters using anti-Semitic slurs. But according to witnesses, the protester who spewed hate speech was a pro-Israel counter-protester. So from the vice president for communications at Northeastern, quote, what began as a student demonstration 2 days ago was infiltrated by professional organizers with no affiliation in Northeastern. Last night, the use of virulent anti-Semitic slurs, including kill the Jews, crossed the line, she said. We cannot tolerate this kind of hate on our campus. Across the country, university administrators and politicians alike have publicized reports of anti-Semitic speech at student-led protests as part of their justification for arresting students and disbanding disbanding protests, urging them to divest from Israel. These accounts often vary from eyewitness accounts of the peaceful. GBH's Tori Bedford quickly confirmed that she had heard somebody say, quote, kill the Jews, but it wasn't the peaceful pro-Palestine protesters. The chant came from a pro-Israel agitator who joined the crowd late Friday night. In a video of the appalling incident provided by an organizer from Huskies for a Free Palestine and posted on X by Bedford, a protest leader prepared to lead a chant saying, quote, you repeat after me, you repeat to me what I say to you, got it? They shout, quote, kill the Jews, yelled one person holding an Israeli flag. Anybody on board? Anybody on board? He was one of two counter-demonstrators who had affixed themselves at the center of the crowd, standing on lawn chairs as they berated the protesters around them. The crowd of protesters immediately booed the young man. The protesters began chanting, we're going to let them leave, drowning out the shouts of the two counter-protesters. After midnight, the two counter-protesters had disengaged, according to reports. The next morning, dozens of NUPD and Boston police arrested around 100 demonstrators, but not the ones whose hate speech had gotten everything shut down. After they loaded the arrested students into vans, students linked arms to prevent the vehicles from leaving campus for hours, according to Huntington News. It's very strange, right? You've got pro-Israel protesters holding Israeli signs. And, you know, it sort of makes sense, right? They're there in the middle of a pro-Palestine protest, and they're like, oh, you want to kill all the Jews, don't you? Kill the Jews, kill the Jews. That's what you're saying, isn't it? And then it's that chant that then gets attributed to the Hamas protesters and then is used to shut down the protest. Meanwhile, George Soros is paying student radicals who are fueling a nationwide explosion of Israel-hating protests. George Soros and his hard-left acolytes are paying agitators who are fueling the explosion of radical anti-Israel protests at colleges across the country. The protests, which began when students took over Columbia University's Morningside Heights campus lawn last week, have mushroomed nationwide. Copycat tent cities have set up have been set up at colleges including Harvard, Yale, Berkeley in California, The Ohio State University, and Emory in Georgia, all of them organized by branches of the Soros-funded Students for Justice in Palestine. And at some, students have clashed with police. The SJP parent organization has been funded by a network of nonprofits, ultimately funded by, among others, Soros, the billionaire left-wing investor. At three college campuses, the protests are being encouraged by paid radicals who are fellows of Soros-funded group called the U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights. I see people confused at this. Why would George Soros be funding an anti-Semitic group? And the answer is because those groups are then used as the excuse to create laws against anti-Semitism. And these things aren't just being, it's not just me saying this. I'm just telling you what the timeline is. This is just actually happening, as now there's a bipartisan bill that would create anti-Semitism monitors at colleges. A pro-Israel House Democrat and Republican plan to introduce legislation creating federally sanctioned anti-Semitism monitors for select college campuses. It's the first bill introduced in Congress as a direct response to the pro-Palestine protests that have rocked Columbia University and other colleges in recent years. Representatives Richie Torres and Mike Lawler are introducing the College Oversight and Legal Updates Mandating Bias Investigations and Accountability Act, or the Columbia Act. The bill would allow the Department of Education to send third-party anti-Semitism monitors to any college that receives federal funding and to revoke that funding for colleges that don't comply. The monitor, paid for by the school, would be charged with releasing a public quarterly report evaluating the progress that a college or university has made towards combating anti-Semitism. The bill was first reported by Jewish Insider. Again, I mean, just like everything, I mean, this is just, it's not even that this is an obvious violation of the First Amendment. It's an obvious overreach by the federal government. Not because people are actually in danger or being assaulted. I mean, that's already illegal. You don't need extra laws for that. But for the speech that makes people uncomfortable or protest against a geopolitical ally, that is the foreign nation state of Israel, it's not just about how bad and obviously anti-American this is. It's also about the almost deliberate show of the difference between the way that the protests roiling college campuses over the last several years that were anti-white or anti-American go totally unaddressed. And good, they should. And I know, it's just so, I'm just trying to think of a way to explain this that isn't like, imagine if it was the other side. But I mean, that's the only way to really understand this. It wouldn't be confusing if this was a congressional bill that said we're going to have monitors, federally funded monitors, to go into colleges and give a report on the anti-white activities there. It would be an obvious example of actual sort of white supremacy. Now, actual white supremacy doesn't actually exist in America. That's why you didn't see that happen with the anti-white protest. So this just goes into what I was talking about last time. The UN is creating an anti-Semitism office. The federal government is creating anti-Semitism agents in every branch of the government, including things like the Department of Education, where they will have a say on the curriculum, so that from elementary school, your entire educational life will be dictated and defined by whether or not it serves the purpose of a foreign nation. And you've got states, you know, implementing anti-Semitism laws using the definition of anti-Semitism provided by the, whatever it is, IHCA or whatever it's called, whose definition of anti-Semitism is as broad as you could possibly get it. So this is, I would just call them inquisitors. I would say the federal government has now put forth a bill, Congress of the United States has now put forth a bill to provide inquisitors to go to college campuses and to ensure the unwavering commitment to this particular religion above all others. Would it be confusing? Would it be complicated? Would it be justified? Would it ever have even been suggested to put Catholic priests in every college to see whether or not they comport with the Catholicism?
The Japanese are normally not inclined to protest, but thousands of them are now marching together in protest of the deadly experimental shots and the WHO pandemic treaty. They are being ignored by their government and media, and they deserve our recognition and support. Launching a class action lawsuit for the families who lost loved ones to the deadly shots and for those whose lives have been destroyed. And the plaintiffs are being heard as they share their painful stories. Medical professor of Osaka City University School, Misayasu Inoue, has recently delivered a warning to the world that Japan has contracted with the WHO to develop a new vaccine for Disease X, which is expected to be deployed worldwide later this year.
A plan was set up to shorten the time to develop vaccines, which usually takes longer than 10 years, to less than 1 year. Operation Warp Speed. This operation was used to cover up the misconception of the genetic vaccines under the pretext of saving time. And an extremely dangerous medicine was selected. I believe that the fraudulent use of experimental gene therapy to healthy people, particularly to healthy children, is an extreme violation of human rights. The Japanese government is the first in the world to approve a new type of vaccine called self-replication replicon vaccine, and plans to start to supply it this fall and winter. The Ministry of Economy, Trade and Industry is providing a huge amount of subsidies for this project, and the factories to produce new vaccines are being built one after another in Japan. Furthermore, the Japanese government is currently soliciting large-scale clinical trials worth $900 million from pharmaceutical companies that are taking on the challenge of developing vaccines to prepare for the next pandemic by Disease X, proposed during the Davos conference this year. If Japan were to become a vaccine perpetrator, it would leave irreparable harm to future generations. Therefore, the actions of the Japanese government must be stopped by international collaborations. It is difficult to stop this movement because it is now politically hopeless to change the situation of the Japanese government. The message I would like to convey to the world is that when Disease X occurs in the future, you should never trust the Japanese-made vaccine.
A final draft of the pandemic treaty is expected to be presented for adoption at the 77th World Health Assembly in May 2024, which will undoubtedly be setting the world up for another planned assault under the guise of world health. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
We got to your phone calls now. Yeah, we'll go out to your phone calls. We still have a lot to talk about in this last hour. A lot having to do with, again, the way that anti-Israel activity is being used to justify total surveillance. It's pretty incredible. We'll go to Kathy in Oklahoma first. Thanks for calling in. Kathy on line one. You're on the air about communists. Thanks for calling in.
Well, thank you for taking my call, Harrison. I've been an InfoWars follower since 2010, and now I'm kind of reaching out for help getting some exposure.
Good.
I'm single-handedly, at this point, taking on the Communist Chinese Party's United Front Work Department, which is the head of the snake of a convoluted snake ball of LLCs that set an intentionally huge fire back on February 20th of 22 and incinerated everything on my 7 acres.
Oh.
From what I gather, talking to other people, I'm not the only one that's had this happen. And this fire was no accident. They lit a huge fire under extreme fire danger weather conditions and actually came within about 2 minutes of trapping me in my house and burning me to death.
Wow. Okay. So in February of 22, there's a wildfire or brush fire that
it was not a wildfire. It was an intentionally set huge crash fire that was set under extreme fire danger weather conditions.
And how does that relate to the Communist Chinese?
It was set by one of these United Front Work Department grow operations, and I'm not the only one that things like this has happened to. I think it's part of the effort to buy up farmland here in this country. China has gotten so much of the world's industry that it takes up 70% of their land mass, leaving only about 30% of their land mass for agricultural production. And now it's being brought up in the context of buying up land around military installations. That those of us that have been directly, individually affected, have, as far as I know, I'm the only one standing up. The others, I don't know. I know I've had a dickens of the time even getting lawyers to talk to me, even though I have aerial drone, Paris Department drone footage at the point of origin, the path, fire path. It's a slam dunk case. It's just, I don't know whether they're just afraid that we won't be able to collect on the case, or if they're just plain afraid to take on the Communist Chinese Party. Well, I have nothing to lose. I'm 70, I'm disabled, I'm too old to start over from scratch without major restitution.
Right.
And I'm hoping that I can at least get enough exposure through interviews to make it obvious that if something happens to me, no, I didn't commit suicide.
Yeah.
And secondarily, get some public exposure and maybe even get some help as far as having to advance this on my own or toward raising a retainer.
Okay, and
get an actual lawyer on here because it is not a pro se level case.
Okay, and I see that you have a Twitter account that you're running. Is that right?
Well, I have a Twitter account with my last name, K-A-T-H-Y. And last name is R-E-N, as in November, E as in Bravo, A-R, E as in Gulf, E-R. But I also have a website that I gave to the screener. If you would be so kind as to let me give that out.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, maybe that's what I'm saying. I thought it was a Twitter account, but it's a website. What's your website?
Okay, there's no www on this. It's all lowercase, no spaces. But https://kathy, immediately followed by 74868. Weebly, which is spelled weebly.com. And my contact information is on the contact page of that website. And
okay.
It's, someone who would like to do an interview or someone who might like to help or other people like me.
So that is interesting. So I just found it. So Kathy 74868.weebly.com, K-A-T-H-Y 74868.weebly.com. And I'm seeing the photos. The photos here.
That's what my house looked like 5 hours after they started that fire.
And so you're thinking that this is a plot to commit arson in order to free up farmland for purchase by the Communist government of China.
I guess that's one way of putting it. I think it's just in line with their policies.
Yeah, I'm interested about this because I've never heard of the United Front Work Department. That's what you called it. And, you know.
Oh, yeah. And too few people have. They're involved in all levels.
Yeah, interestingly. So here's the Wikipedia article. There's a Wikipedia article about it. United Front Work Department. It's a department of the Central Committee of the Chinese Communist Party tasked with United Front work. It gathers information on, intelligence on, manages relationships with, and attempts to gain influence over elite individuals and organizations inside and outside mainland China, including Hong Kong, Taiwan, and other countries. And there's actually – searching this gives you a report from state.gov, the subversive agenda of the United Front. The United Front is the third of the CCP's so-called magic weapons to seize and maintain total political power alongside armed struggle and party building. So this is very interesting. Thank you for bringing awareness to this. I hope that, somebody listening can reach out and help you find more answers about what exactly happened.
If any of you folks do an interview, I'm game. My phone number's on my contact sheet.
All right, well, we'll take a look at that. Yeah, very, very interesting and obviously in line with what we know the Chinese government is doing in and out of China. From Al Jazeera, China spinning a web of influence campaigns to win over Taiwan, one of the many ways that they're working to perform a bloodless coup there. Thank you very much for the call, Kathy, and I hope you get the help that you need to get justice if indeed it was an arson attack that that burned your land. Thank you for calling. Let's go now to JR in New York. He wants to talk about Zionism in general. Go ahead, JR. You're on the air.
How you doing, Harrison? Nice to hear you. The best. So I was just going to talk about the red heifer. That kind of disappeared. But I'm not sure if the date passed. But I don't know. But I know that the next date, if they don't sacrifice, is on Shavuot, which is June 11th to June 13th, or is it July? But basically, I was thinking how these people are. I've been calling in for a while about the Zionists and how it's actually not the Jews; it's the Sabbatean Frankist cult, which is a death cult, like literally a death cult. So there is no backing out of this. There's no solving this. These people are out for blood, and they're black magicians. So in the Bible. The Bible is the greatest book created. We take it for granted. Everybody takes it literally, and that's why people think we actually need to sacrifice a red heifer. It has nothing to do with sacrificing an actual animal.
And the priest who does that in the Bible, his name is Eleazar. And basically his name is mentioned 72 times in the Bible, not a coincidence. And there's 72 names of God, and the Satanists just reverse those names and read them backwards. Trump is a Zionist. He practices Kabbalah. There's black Kabbalah and there's white Kabbalah. This whole thing is about basically a blood sacrifice. And they believe that they're going to bring back their Messiah through massive death because they believe in redemption through sin. David Icke talks about it in his books, The Trigger and The Answer. You could just look up Sabbatian Francis Cult in the index and just go straight towards the back of the book. And he gives a rundown of how Iran is connected. And all this stuff is just a giant game and we're all going to be killed. So the best thing you can do is alchemize yourself and just come to know yourself and know God, because there's going to be a war and we're all going to survive. Some of us will survive, but it's really about, they want to stop us from actualizing ourselves, self-actualization, like Carl Jung talks about. Alex Jones has talked about it. They want to stop you from becoming a real man. That's why they don't want you to have a family, because in the close quarters life with your wife, you're going to argue. There's going to be drama with your kids, and that's how you transform yourself. You turn the seven metals into gold. That's the real meaning of alchemy. They're black magicians, alchemists, that want to destroy us and bring a golem. We have to transform ourselves. Christianity is a mystical religion. That's what the whole Bible is about. This is all about self-transformation. God is giving us the opportunity through this darkness to go within and seek the light, because there is no escape. We have to meditate, go within, seek answers, try to go for inner peace. And I think messages will come to us when we have the true technology. It's meditation, astral projection, going within. That's how the ancients knew the shapes of molecules. All the secrets of the universe are within us. That's why they want you glued to your phone. When the grid goes down, the grid within will awaken. We need to go within to our own grid, the Akashic records. You know what I'm saying? Not even on a new age way.
Right.
Forget the new age. That's a psyop. We are an alchemical spaceship time machine. I'm not even like a new ager at all.
No, I get it. It's actually in line with the basic like spiritual beliefs of Christianity. If you actually look into what they are, I mean, people think of Christianity as I don't know, something just like you go to church on Sunday and you pray. But like, no, it's actually a pretty intense, spiritual dedication you have to actually understand all this stuff. And one of the compelling arguments I've heard as to why they're so desperate to like bring in AI and bring in brain interfaces, Neuralink just type stuff is, if you're not actually able to make choices and you're not able to actually have free will, right? When Yuval Noah Harari says, free will is over, free will is an illusion. Well, free will is a necessary component of being saved, right? Of actually dedicating yourself to Christ, or from being saved in a Christian understanding of what that takes. So if they can steal your ability to make choices or steal your ability to actually have free will, then they steal your ability of ever being saved and going to heaven. It's like an impassable barrier once that brain chip interface goes into place, or once whatever other chemical machinations they can pull to block you off from the source. Interesting call. Thank you for that, JR. And I do always appreciate your calls, alchemy and black magic. It sounds fantastical, but it's what the people at the top believe, so it's worth paying attention to. Let's go now to Cornelius in Wisconsin. Let's talk about Ukraine. I got a lot of news about Ukraine I haven't even gotten to yet, but go ahead, Cornelius. You're called in about the new tanks in Ukraine. What about them?
Hey, Harrison, happy Monday. Yeah, I wanted to talk about the new turtle tank or Tsar tank. I've called you before talking about the tanks and escalation over there. And in the line of what I've said before, the new high tech is low tech mixed with ultra high tech. So this new turtle tank, or czar tank, they're calling it now, is just basically wrapped in another layer of metal, like the Germans did in World War II. And then it has an array of drone jamming equipment on the roof. So the drones coming in that are armed with armor-piercing munitions fly off into the ground. Or if they do make contact with the tank, they explode on the outer layer. Some of them are also rumored to have the ARENA system, which is super advanced, where a Doppler radar recognizes the target and with AI shoots a countercharge and explodes the incoming attack. But the interesting part, how it relates to the escalation, is that now that the jamming equipment's being used to prevent the drones from being controlled, I estimate within 6 months' time or less, they're going to put programming firmware on the drones to have them fly by themselves and be shielded. So right. We're going to have AI drones then flying that are going to be fully autonomous, which I think is a huge escalation over there.
Well, we know that before every world war, there's sort of a smaller, almost testing conflict. Before World War II, there's the Spanish-American War. Before World War I, I believe there's the Russian-Japanese War. But there's always these like little wars before the big ones, and it's usually about testing and field testing the technological advances over the last little while. So obviously, there's been huge technological advances on display in the Ukraine war, one of which is that you can destroy a $100,000 tank with a $50 drone if you know how to use it correctly. And so what we were just showing on the screen is the so-called turtle tank. That is so first the drone is the advancement. Now this tank is the next advancement. And now you're talking about, you know, what the drones will, you know, the advancements in drone technology that will then deal with the tank. And this is just a real life testing ground there in Ukraine to try to deal
like
with the
space race.
Yeah, like the space race, but more brutal and lowbrow. And so, yeah, it's interesting. These tanks, if people haven't seen them, obviously you're seeing them here if you're a TV viewer, but if you're a radio listener, I mean, it just looks like a tank.
They look out of Mad Max.
Yeah, it looks like something out of Mad Max, exactly, like rusted scrap metal on top of this tank. It's interesting, going almost back to the basics to deal with these incredibly advanced drone technologies. So what do you think this represents in terms of the overall conflict?
Well, it's escalation because they're sending these tanks in. Obviously, they're assault tanks, so they drive like directly into the Ukrainian bases, dump their load of like 105-millimeter tank rounds and coaxial machine gun, and then leave. A lot of the Russians don't even survive. Mm. But it's like the brutalism of attacks that's escalating. They're using the Russian Bear bomber, which is a giant escalation. They didn't have those things in the sky before. A lot more pickup and missiles. There's even rumors, listen to this, Harrison, that they have weaponized rats. And these rats are engineered in Russian labs to chew on the electric wiring of NATO and U.S. tanks. So a cheap little rat will eat the corn husk layer of the cabling because the tanks are supposed to be eco-friendly now, so they use corn husk as an insulator.
Are you serious?
And these rats will disable an entire tank. And it was a rumor that the Russians also did this in the Napoleonic Wars.
Oh, no, well, that's certainly not the first time. I hadn't heard that about the rats. But, I mean, rats have been used in warfare. Rats apparently are very good at sniffing out landmines. They're used to sniff out landmines in places like Africa where, landmines are left behind after conflict zones. In World War II, they had dogs trained, and you would just train a dog. You know, you'd go to an airfield, you'd have a tank out in the field, and you'd put a treat under the tank. You would just train a dog to run at the tank and go under it, and then you take the dog to the battlefield. You strap a explosive vest to him. The dog does what it's been trained to do and charges and dives under the tank, and then you set the explosion off and blow it up. So it might sound crazy using rats to take out tanks, but they've used dogs to take out tanks. I wouldn't be surprised if they've used rats to take out tanks before as well. Rats in my swarm, yeah, that's different. But the headline we're showing here is different. But yeah, no, I'm not really surprised by that at all. The corn husk thing is new to me. I hadn't heard that, but that's not out of the question that they'd use trained animals to go after tanks. It's sort of barbaric, but it is effective. That's fascinating. I actually have another story here about a very advanced tank technology. But anything else for us before I move on to this next story, Cornelius?
Look into the ARENA active denial system that they're putting on the tanks because it's super high tech. They're also using the same turtle tank and COPE cages in Israel now because they've been proven effective. They're using it on the Israeli tanks as they, stomp out the Palestinians and commit the Palestinian Holocaust over there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a fascinating time in a sort of gruesome and dark way. Military technology is advancing leaps and bounds day by day with all these conflicts. Well, it's what they need, you know. You can theorize and test in laboratories all you want. It's not until it hits the battlefield until you see what works and what doesn't. This story is from TechSpot.com. DARPA unleashes 20-foot autonomous robo-tank with glowing green eyes. Oh, good. So, you know, these conflicts between Israel and Ukraine have seen the first battlefield deployment of, you know, widespread suicide drone technology, some of the missile technology that's being revealed is pretty incredible. Laser directed energy weapon technology is being deployed for the first time in Israel in the Iron Dome system to shoot down incoming missiles being deployed there. You also have robot dogs being used by Israel to go into the tunnels that Hamas uses. You know, they were using actual dogs, but now they're using robot dogs. And now you have this. The Pentagon's mad scientists have been cooking up a beast of an unarmed, unmanned combat vehicle, and it just took a major step forward. DARPA recently put its 12-ton Racer heavy platform autonomous tank through a fresh round of testing out in the wild. For those not in the know, DARPA has been working on self-driving military vehicles for two decades now as part of its RACER, that is Robotic Autonomy in Complex Environments with Resiliency program. The goal is to develop autonomous ground vehicles that can navigate off-road terrain without any human input. The newest phase involved letting the RHP loose on some legit U.S. military training grounds in Texas. The video showed off rugged, obstacle-filled environments packed with vegetation, waterways, ditches, and rocky outcrops, exactly the kind of hellish conditions that could give a self-driving system a full-on meltdown. But DARPA's 20-foot-long unmanned behemoth seemed to handle it well without breaking a sweat. The agency reports the RHP knocked out 30 miles of autonomous route following and cruised along at speeds of up to 25 miles per hour. So, yes, as these wars overseas empower DARPA and other, you know, weapons manufacturers around the world to accelerate their testing programs, we're seeing more and more terrifying autonomous weapons being deployed in the testing phase and on the battlefield as we enter in a robotic control system. So many stories. No, haven't even gotten to. I'm going to wait till tomorrow to cover what's going on in Ireland because that is a pretty big deal as well. Just the Irish actually doing what we'd hope they do and standing up against the globalist scheme to deliberately replace their entire population with Africans. Just absolutely insane that they're allowing this to happen or that they're doing this at the highest level of the Irish government, but the Irish people are standing up against it and getting brutalized in return. There's also more. I didn't even really get into the Chief Trumpster thread about what's happening with some of these groups using Mossad agents to spy on and dox college students who are protesting against the Gaza war. There's not enough time. You would think there would be with 3 hours a day, but there really isn't. I do want to just talk about this story for a minute because this is huge. I mentioned the Daily Dispatch, but it really is worth delving into. Judge Cannon unseals unredacted Mar-a-Lago search warrant affidavit. It's the headline from Gateway Pundit. Judge Eileen Cannon unsealed an unredacted version of the FBI's affidavit used to obtain a Mar-a-Lago search warrant. In August 2022, the Justice Department of Joe Biden released a highly redacted Trump raid affidavit when the FBI raided his home in Mar-a-Lago to look for classified material. Media organizations asked to unseal the affidavit in support of the search warrant. Only a redacted version was previously unsealed. Last year, Magistrate Judge Bruce Reinhardt approved new aspects of the Trump Mar-a-Lago search warrant to be unsealed. However, the government agreed that a redacted version of the response would be unsealed without compromising legitimate government interest. The newly unredacted documents reveal how the Biden regime shifted the investigation from classified documents to an Espionage Act case. In the unredacted version, the unidentified FBI special agent says he received training at Quantico specific to counterintelligence and espionage investigations. Jack Smith indicted Trump on 37 federal counts in Miami last June for lawfully storing presidential records at his Mar-a-Lago estate, which Secret Service agents protected. Trump was charged with 31 counts under the Espionage Act of willful retention of national defense information and six other process crimes stemming from his conversations with his lawyers. The unredacted affidavit makes it sound like all of the boxes originated from the White House in January 2021. Julie Kelly asks, why would this need to be redacted? And keep in mind, as I flagged yesterday, two pallets of Trump's boxes were transported from a GSA facility in Virginia to Mar-a-Lago in early August 2021. The affidavit makes it sound like all of the boxes originated from the White House in January 2021. However, we know now that at least two pallets of boxes were sent to Virginia before they ended up in Mar-a-Lago. These were the boxes that ended up having documents with classified markings on them. These boxes were dumped outside of D.C. in Virginia and then ended up at Mar-a-Lago. It was a total setup. According to the unredacted affidavit, the FBI wanted the dimensions of Melania's personal suite at Mar-a-Lago in the owner's quarters, meaning that they knew exactly what they were doing before they ever did it. And the story from Zero Hedge asks the question in a more deliberate way. New bombshell evidence emerges. Was Trump set up in the classified documents saga? This week in Florida, Judge Eileen Cannon unsealed this trove of documents that they wanted to keep hidden, and you'll find out why. Among the documents unsealed were extensive exhibits, motions, and other filings shedding light on the intricate web of communications between the Biden White House and the National Archives and Records Administration in the lead up to Trump's indictment. Investigative journalist Julie Kelly found something interesting in the documents that could change everything. The first thing is testimony from an FBI agent who testified that the General Services Association, GSA, had been in possession of Trump's boxes in Virginia before ordering Trump's team to come get them, which is pretty interesting. So the GSA has possession of these documents, tells Trump's team, you got to come pick these up and take them to Mar-a-Lago. He does, then they kick in the door and say, you know, what are you doing with these documents? You're under arrest and charged with a felony. So an entire pallet full of boxes had been held by the GSA, the General Services Association, somewhere outside of D.C., was dumped at Mar-a-Lago. Apparently, these boxes ended up containing papers with classified markings, saying, I'll double-check the indictment, but I don't recall this event in the timeline. So it appears as though the Biden administration may have been responsible for shipping classified information to Trump's Mar-a-Lago home in Florida. So this is the presidential equivalent of the cop putting the baggie of coke in your pocket as he arrests you. That's what this is. This is them planting evidence and then using that evidence as an excuse to go after Trump and charge him with espionage of all things. And then use that to justify withholding intelligence information from Trump that's being delivered to him as the inevitable or assumed presidential candidate for the Republican Party. The development is significant because Trump had previously blamed the GSA for packing the boxes that contained the classified documents, only to later accuse Trump of essentially stealing them and using that as a pretext for sending the FBI to raid his home in August 2022. It was a setup from the get-go, remarked Tom Fitton, founder of Judicial Watch. Meanwhile, Joe Biden had classified information that he was never entitled to have, stored in boxes in his garage for years, but was not charged. Biden blamed staffers for packing the classified information in that case. While this may not prove the Biden administration set up Trump in the classified document case, and considering the way the Biden administration has abused the legal system against Trump, no one can confidently say they wouldn't. Even so, it still raises other legitimate questions. For example, if the GSA had been in possession of the boxes, why wasn't a review of the material conducted before they instructed Trump's team to get them? When it comes to classified information, they wouldn't have expected Trump and his staff to be responsible for ensuring the classified documents weren't among the records. Perhaps they did review the contents of the boxes and knew there were classified documents contained in them before they told Trump's people to come and get them. It was a setup. It was a total setup. Total and complete setup. A fraud. An excuse to target Trump with one of many outrageous legal challenges that have since totally hamstrung his entire presidential campaign. With that, we go out to your calls once again. James in California is called in about the Israel-Hamas protest. Go ahead, James. You're on the air.
Yeah. You know, I just want to give a little context to some of this. A lot of these people on the left and right are brain dead and they don't know any of it. And what Alex Jones was saying last night about the complexities of these things and understanding the context. Okay. So we got to understand that. So we trained the Taliban in the Pakistan mountains to fight against the Soviets in the Afghan-Soviet war. That became al-Qaeda in 1989 under Osama bin Laden. We overthrew Saddam in 2003, and in 2004, al-Qaeda took over, not a coincidence. In 2006, al-Qaeda became the Islamic State of Iraq. In 2010, the Arab Spring and Obama funded the Muslim Brotherhood to throw over dictatorships, and he thought, oh, well, if I fund the Muslim Brotherhood, that'll somehow help America, which it wasn't. This is all orchestrated, okay? It's no coincidence that in 2011, the Syrian civil war broke out between Iran and Russian-backed forces and al-Qaeda and Muslim Brotherhood-backed forces that would later become, in 2013, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, ISIS. Okay, and so Hamas is Sunni, and the Muslim Brotherhood and al-Qaeda and ISIS are all Sunni theocratic supremacists. Hamas is Sunni, but they aren't the same as ISIS because they fight with Hezbollah and Iran, which are Shia, because it's all this nation state building. Okay, that's what Alex Jones was talking about. Iran is interested in nation state building. They've been fighting against the Taliban for decades and al-Qaeda. And so we have a hand in all of this. We are borderline terrorists, okay? We just aren't the ones cutting heads off. And so these people that are picking sides, they don't understand any of this, dude, and this is the context that people need to understand. Right.
Oh, yeah. And it goes deeper than you're even saying. Stay on the line, James. We'll go back to you on the other side. We've got to go to commercial break here. But if you're talking about Saddam Hussein, take it back to the 80s. We armed Saddam Hussein. I mean, it's the same thing over and over. We arm the people, then we go to war with them. It's like over and over, like clockwork. We could wake up anytime we choose. It's a matter of awareness. It's an information war. James in California, we got cut off by the commercial break there, but you're talking about, again, the really brilliant breakdown Alex Jones did yesterday, Sunday evening, about the complexities of the way these conflicts, these international conflagrations are used to destroy the old world and build the new world order. Anything else you want to say before we move on here, James?
Yeah, you know, all of this social engineering has been like decades in the work, okay? You know, the same Muslim Brotherhood that started in Egypt was co-opted by the CIA to kill Malcolm X, right? Malcolm X, you know, because I studied his writings in my English literature freshman class, and, you know, at first when he was in prison, he was so anti-white, but then he became Muslim, but then he started talking about, hey, we need to unite black, brown, white, Christian, Muslim, Jew against the powers that be. And the two Muslim Brotherhood members blew him away at a rally. I mean, at a speech he was giving, they completely unloaded on him. Those dudes never went to jail because they were CIA operatives. So it's the same people that killed MLK so they could prop up people like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson and the NAACP to start all this racial nonsense. Mm-hmm. And all these gay for Gazas, man. It's like, listen, I have it. You know, Hamas isn't as hardcore as ISIS, but man, people think that Hamas and Sunni supremacists are going to treat them good. No, they're going to cut their throat open and watch them bleed. So y'all need to be careful. And also, Laura Loomer, you call yourself America first, but you also identify as a Zionist when Zionism itself is the reason that 6 million Jews were killed through Hitler. They don't care about actual Jews. They're obsessed with Israel. And I could break down that too, but we'll save that for another time with the investment firms and how we funded German industrialist Fritz Thyssen and all that. And so,
and Alex got into that as well last night. Yeah, it's you talk about going on for years. Yeah. It's been going on for lifetimes, honestly, the way, again, the problem reaction solution, controlling both sides of conflicts, creating the enemies that you eventually fight decades later. It's happened with Saddam. It happened with al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden. It's happened with ISIS. I mean, it's time and time again. This is what This is what the deep state does, and they're very good at it. And now they're unveiling it here in America. And they're both funding the protests that they then use to shut down your free speech and creating the agitation that's used to send in the cops, that used to, you know, empower the protests. I mean, it's like a cycle that we can break anytime by realizing that conflict is the purpose. Divide and conquer is the strategy, and unity and peace is the only thing that defeats these machinations. I think sort of a brilliant breakdown there, James. Thank you for that. And I look forward to you calling in later and breaking down more stuff like that, since you clearly know exactly what you're talking about. I appreciate it. Speaking of someone who knows what he's talking about, Simon in Florida has called in about World Economic Forum meetings taking place. Go ahead, Simon. You're on the air.
Hello there, Harrison. It's a pleasure to speak with you again. And yesterday, and it just finished today, there was a special meeting of the World Economic Forum in Saudi Arabia. Yesterday was largely to do with health issues, and the world doctor, Mr. Bill Gates, was present, speaking at length, reminiscing about how he had spent 25 years at Microsoft and then a 25-year philanthropic career. They'd come up with a scheme to vaccinate 370 million children for polio, because last year in the entire world there were 4 cases of wild polio. So that's a 90 million injections per one actual naturally occurring case. Doesn't particularly seem very efficient. But what was particularly scary about the presentation that was also attended by Tedros, the head of the World Health Organization, is he, to the shock of his co-panelist, the new Prime Minister of Pakistan, announced twice in the space of 1 minute that is available on video. Your team might like to show it tomorrow. He said that the pandemic agreement that was previously a treaty that needed Senate confirmation, that then was called an accord, that was too much like a treaty, so is now called an agreement in order to try and avoid U.S. Senate confirmation, is indeed intended to be legally binding. And he then reiterated that again. And when quizzed, are you talking about the version that's going to be presented next month? He said, yes, the version that the government are negotiating the final details on, that will be voted on in May 2024.
Okay, so we've anybody... heard, just to clarify here, I'm going to let you keep going. I just want to clarify. So we've seen headlines recently that's like, well, they basically abandoned the WHO treaty. Everybody spoke out against it, and that was unpopular, so we're not doing it. But they're doing the same thing. They're just calling an agreement and therefore circumventing the requirement for the Senate to approve it, since it's not technically a treaty, but it still will be legally enforceable, making it a treaty. So it's just rhetorical trickery to do the same thing they were going to do, but claim it's something else.
And you summarized it perfectly there, Harrison. And what is particularly concerning about this trend of calling things agreements is it was announced on the official government website of the president of Ukraine also yesterday that America and Ukraine are in the final stages of negotiating what has already happened with France, Germany, and Britain, a 10-year bilateral security, not treaty, but agreement. And both of these things are part of what Europe is engaging in, which is called Trump-proofing. They're trying to tie the hands of the Trump administration, at least through the next 5 years, but in this case, a 10-year bilateral security agreement with the government of Ukraine,
right,
which Zelensky himself specifically said would be the most extensive of any of the other bilateral security agreements that have already been concluded with other European governments, none of which have gone through parliamentary ratification.
Right.
So we're essentially taking on a dozen plus bilateral defense obligations, as opposed to simply jamming Ukraine into NATO in the meeting coming up in July.
Right.
So there's a lot of other things going on around the world. I actually was so concerned about these developments. We did a special emergency broadcast on weaponizednews.com last night, and we'll be covering the day's events at the World Economic Forum today, which is largely focused on Middle East peace and has included not one but two appearances by the United States Secretary of State, Antony Blinken. So we need to pay attention because America is suddenly finding itself tied up in a heck of a lot of agreements all over the world.
Right. And the point you make, I mean, this is what they've said in America. They've said, we're going to get this, Ukraine weapons agreement done. So even if Trump gets in office and wants to stop it, his hands will be tied. He won't be able to actually act as president. We'll have already set these agreements in place. And I've got some more on this here, and we're coming up to the end of the show. But let me ask you, did you see Xi Jinping sort of insult Blinken? Blinken was visiting with Xi Jinping, and Xi Jinping's like, when's this guy going to get out of here? Did you see that? What was your take on that, Simon?
Yes, I did. And it's very clear that they were extremely unhappy with the tone of Blinken's visit. We're on a 90-day countdown to the U.S. administration, potentially under the laws that just got passed that Biden signed last week. The fourth part of it had more sanctions against Iran, Russia, and China. So we're now on a 90-day countdown for them to announce sanctions on Chinese shipping companies, Chinese banks, and Chinese oil refiners. And this was an issue that was discussed by Secretary Blinken with the president of the World Economic Forum on stage today, because China is now buying 91% of all of the oil exported by Iran. And Blinken has made very, very explicit threats. And he said he did it not only to the foreign minister, but to President Xi to his face off video. And
Xi was not happy about that. I'm sorry, we're running out of time here, Simon, but weaponizednews.com. I'll be checking out your special broadcast from David Sachs. Zelensky announces that Ukraine is working on security agreement with the U.S. that will fix levels of support for the next 10 years. The $61 billion was just the beginning. The next two U.S. presidents won't be able to switch it off. So they are preparing for, I mean, it's World War III, and the lines are being drawn, and the alliances are being hardened, and they're preparing for full-on conflict. Thank you to all of our callers. I'm sorry to the callers I wasn't able to get to. Call in tomorrow. I'd love to go to all of you because these topics, and I told you how much news we have, and I didn't even know the World Economic Forum was meeting. That just shows you how overwhelming this attack is truly becoming from the globalists. InfoWarsStore.com. Help us defeat them.